Okay. So maybe we should get started. Do you want to do a quick update on what's been going on, Danny?
Okay. Yeah. Seeming is kind of kicking my butt a little bit, unfortunately.
Do you have the right environment to work in?
Yeah. It's I'm able to compile it and able to compile the make files and then actually make. Successfully with the make files. It's just not making all the executables for some reason. So I'm trying to...
But you're getting enough notification as to what is going on with the messages and things like that?
Not really. There was one... For a little bit, there was an occurrence where it made one of the executables and I couldn't figure out why it was only making the other one. So I made some changes. Also, just to make it better to follow, just easier to follow along, put all the CMake stuff in the folder, like Leo suggested. And then I'm not able to make that one executable anymore. So, but these are all the executables in the test file, I should mention, not the main library.
You make it sound like the machine is scheming against you.
It kind of seems like. Yeah. I just need to understand more what's going on behind the scenes. Because it does a lot of heavy-duty work for you.
It's probably the machine conspiring against you.
Well, then there are many machines that conspire against me.
Yeah, so I guess it's just a question of spending more time with the software until you totally understand what's going on.
Right? I think that's it.
Okay. But have you been able to run any tests so far?
Yeah.
Even manually, let's say, without using CMake, have you been able to do anything?
No, I haven't tried.
Okay, so that might be worth doing, you know, just to, you know, the CMake thing can overwhelm you if you, I mean, it seems like it is already, so I don't want you to completely immerse yourself in it when it gets overwhelming. So you need to have something else that you do to distract yourself. So one of those things could be running some tests and trying to understand the code. And then, you know, when you feel more up to it, then you can come back to the CMake exercise.
Okay.
It's just one suggestion. Okay. All right, good. Leo?
Right. Good. So I spent some time going through the code, trying to look for different points in which you have to modify the way we're doing the atomic updates. I couldn't find anything else. So I stopped doing that.
When you say you couldn't find anything else, you couldn't find any other ordering points? Or?
Yes, I think we covered most of them.
Okay, so it's a positive thing when you say you couldn't find anything else.
Yeah. And I think it has to do because the code for recovery and it's there's a lot of code that is shared. So the logic is that we cover doing through the thing cover most of the code for the other part. So that's the reason why I think I didn't find any other conflicts. I also wrote a high level description of what we do in the main functions, like what happens when there's a recovery, what happens when you do a C point, to help them understand better the code.
And also, I think it will also help us write those specific sections of the paper to understand what's going on, so that we can describe it correctly.
So it's a high-level description of what's going on. And I, reading the code, I noticed that some of the data sources that I'm using are very complicated. I haven't found a way to simplify them. So, to speed up also the process of understanding and to make our discussion more meaningful, I started putting together some diagrams of the data structures. Because looking at the code takes forever to actually see the connections. But if I show you a diagram, this is how all the pieces fit together. It makes sense a lot quicker. So I'm finishing that up. I'm gonna put all that in the repository to help people understand the code. because the sooner they understand it, the sooner they will be able to contribute.
I think there are some software also that will create this sort of dependency.
True.
Data structure dependency.
There's one called Doxy or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it requires you to add some code.
Some tags.
Yeah.
Mm.
We should definitely do that. But I think that's more time consuming than
creating this
than creating some diagrams. I don't know. Ideally we should have both.
Hmm.
But I guess for now I'm gonna finish that. I also spent some time thinking about the problem that we were discussing last week. How to share containers across multiple
mm-hmm.
processes. But I haven't come up with anything yet. Still the back burner.
That's perfectly normal. So
I guess
you get to keep continuing thinking about it.
If you have
something, then we can brainstorm. Right?
Yeah. I was writing some small tests, sharing some memory that would memory map from file to different processes. It seems that there's no guarantee as to when the other file sees the update. I guess it has to do,
Well, if it's shared mapping, then it would be immediately. Because the same page that is being mapped into both address spaces. Same physical page.
Yeah, I'm doing something wrong. I wasn't seeing the updates immediately after.
But how do you know it's immediately? So you're waiting for something to happen. You're sending a signal from one process to the other so you know that it was done with the update.
Printing some timestamps and doing some pullings in the process and things like that. I have some sharing and there's some pullings.
And this is a shared mapping, right? So you map shared?
Yeah, I think so.
You map a private.
I don't know, maybe there's something wrong. I'm trying to understand better the dynamic of this sharing thing.
Hmm.
But yeah, it seems complicated.
So we talked about two specific problems. One is sharing a container across, the same container across
multiple processes.
And that's the one you're talking about currently.
Yes.
Okay. And then we talked about one more problem, which was
Linking containers,
right.
Yeah. Yes, linking containers.
I thought this was similar to sharing the container, because if more than one process in the same container.
Well, one is a problem where there are two processes involved. Another is a problem where there is potentially only one process involved. That problem makes sense even with only one process. When you have pointed from one container to another container. So I would say let's look at the simplest version of each problem so that we are not you're not creating any additional complications for the first round of the solution. And it might be easier to solve an easier problem than to solve a more difficult problem in the initial attempt.
Yeah, I find myself going back and forth when I think about the problem. Sometimes I just discard everything I know about the current design, just basically thinking about it. From scratch.
Yeah.
Like if that is the only problem that I want to solve. And then I remember that there are some other things that are really there in conflict. It's tricky.
But even if you, I guess it takes some discipline to be able to disassociate yourself with everything that's already built up to solve a new problem. But I think it's worth doing, and I would encourage you to do that. And maybe that'll give us a new direction for our design.
Yeah, I was trying to do that because when I find myself thinking from the current design, I see so many constraints and problems and little things that don't work. So I was trying to disattach myself from that to see if I could think more creatively. I don't know. I guess I'm gonna have to take notes about what comes to my mind so I don't go loops.
Yeah. And have you given any thought to the pointers that are across containers?
No. I don't know why I find that the sharing of containers across processes is somehow more useful, or at least seems more interesting to me.
Right. I think both are interesting problems to think about, and it would be good to have a solution to discuss for at least one of them, and then we can maybe have a more productive meeting. So Leah, let me ask you, for the code inspection, right, that we've been doing, have you had a chance to make it more modular, where everything, every place that requires some sort of ordering has some primitives that you call into, and then all those primitives are implemented in one location? And
I think the code has always been like that.
Okay. So what are these primitives that you have? Is there just one, or are there more than one?
There are some atomic operations to update flags. So there's some bits and then signing integer or something like that. There's some atomic operations.
Atomic and persistent too?
They perform operations atomically and persistent memory.
In persistent memory.
Yes. We only care about persistent memory.
Right. But I'm just wondering if the atomicity applies to the persistence part of the operation, or just the operation itself needs to be atomic.
It's in the sense that the operation itself, the operation needs to go all the way to persistent memory.
Oh, okay. So it's, yeah, you care about the persistence.
Yes.
As well as, so it has to be atomically persistent.
Atomically persistent, yes.
Okay.
I think the atomicity is given because these are updates of 8 bytes.
Yeah, but that would only be true for, I guess, for volatile memory, right?
That's no,
not
hold,
even.
That doesn't hold for persistent memory?
Depends on whether you're talking about persistence or not. Right?
No, what I mean is that there are two issues here, right? One is that when I mean atomically persistent, I mean that update needs to go all the way to persistent memory.
Mm-hmm.
But also that you will update those 8 bytes all at once, or none of them.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning that I think it's guaranteed by the setting of instruction of the CPU, by the architecture itself, that you, when you say update this, because it's advised in memory, it will, you never see anything that is like 4 bits were updated but not the other 4, or something like that. That's the assumption that I'm making.
In persistent memory.
In persistent memory, yes.
Okay. Yeah, I guess we need to find references for that. To assume that.
PMFS assumes that too, right?
I don't know. I think so, but we have to be careful here, because that's a very fundamental assumption that is being made, right?
True. Maybe I should add that comment to the matter, saying we assume the major assumption here.
I'm thinking more in terms of the paper and the reference that we need to put in the paper.
Okay. So, I have all the atomic operations separated into a set of files, into a file, which is called atomics, and I'm putting everything there. So we have atomics for dealing with pointers, atomically setting these pointers, bits. I have a new primitive for the main copy.
What is that?
It's atomically main copying persistent memory that does the main copy, but it's also...
From persistent memory into volatile, or volatile to persistent, or persistent to persistent?
I think it is used as long as the destination address is in persistent memory.
The destination address is in persistent memory.
Right, because it has also the logic. It has to have the logic to flush. It cache to make sure there is all the way to persistent memory. Mm-hmm.
So atomically persistent copy.
Yes, it's the main copy that guarantees that goes all the way to persistent memory.
And is atomic too?
No.
It's not atomic.
That one is not atomic. It's not atomic.
But it's blocking. It's blocking meaning that it doesn't return until everything is copied into persistent memory.
Correct. Yes. I'm not sure if we need that to be atomic or not.
Yeah, I don't know. It depends on how it's being used. We can talk about how it's being used, but before we do that, what we should talk about how the copying is made persistent. So what do you do currently?
Well, as of now, the code is using this function, I think it's called pmaincopy or something like that, which as of now is just a wrapper from maincopy.
Is what?
It's just a wrapper from maincopy.
Okay.
But what I plan to do that is once we have the implement the simulation of pmsync, the flush, the CL flush, the simulation of the CL flush, then that one will CM flush all the cache lines that were involved in the main copy of that reading.
Okay.
That's my plan. I don't think I don't have plan. I haven't planned doing anything else in that function. It's just that, just the regular main copy that flushes the cache lines. With the simulation.
I see. And so then maybe you should talk about the simulation of the CL flush.
I haven't made much progress about that yet.
So I think that's important for you to figure out soon, right? So that we can start running some experiments as well.
That's true, yeah. That will give us more realistic.
So do you have any, do you see any path to implementing CL flush at this point, or you're still looking for what to do?
I think we know what we have to do.
Yeah.
It's just I don't know how to do it, how to implement it. And I started reading some small tutorial, but I haven't finished that. I'm a little bit behind that. It's an assembly tutorial for superrammers. I need to finish that. In particular, one question that I don't know, for instance, is that in the instruction, there's one step in which you have to move stuff to the register. I'm assuming that there's a mechanism to request for a temporary register. I don't know how to do that, because I cannot blindly use a register. I don't know what's there, right? So I think there's a mechanism by which you say, give me a temporary register, and you know you can use it to do your operations, and eventually, once you relinquish that, but I cannot just I want to use this register as a temporary register, because I don't know what's there.
Yeah.
So that question I haven't been able to answer yet, and that's one of the steps required for the simulation.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's very simple to do that. I just don't know how to do it. I've never done it before.
Yeah, neither have I. So it would require some research to find out what needs to be done.
Right. But I guess it should be very simple, right? It's.
I guess we just need to find the right source of the information.
Right. But in operation like that, I guess it's super common, right? Compilers do that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Right, you put stuff in temporary variable and register.
So that's one detail that you haven't sorted out yet. What does the next?
Right.
What is the rest of the CL flush involve?
I don't remember from the top of my head, but I think the rest I understand what needs to be done. It was moving to the register, and there were two other things that I don't remember, but I think I understood those.
And this is this consistent with what the YAT paper mentions for persistence? I think there was some instructions about what is that in to issue a barrier I guess, on
barriers are, I know how to reach. Those
right.
I know.
But was it just the barrier or something else? I'm trying to recall.
There was a barrier and there was another instruction too, which I found it on the
fence.
The description of the simulation is in the email that you sent.
I know, but I'm just thinking about how to make things persistent, right? Because they say when you issue a CL flush, it has no effect until you issue a fence, followed by a fence, right? So I don't know if that specific simulation will also require a fence. Maybe it doesn't. Because here they're talking about a CL flush instruction.
That's right. I see what you're saying.
And so the other thing is that I would suggest you having two versions of this CL flush. One is with the conventional CL flush followed by a fence, right? And the other is the simulation of the CL flush.
Then you think the goal of the simulation, if I understand correctly, is just to get some
performance
numbers, right?
Performance gain. Is to get performance gain over the conventional CL flush, which is easier to just issue. You don't have to simulate it with all the complexity that you are currently worried about.
Okay.
Does that make sense to you?
It does make sense, but why would we want to do that without the fences?
Without the fences?
Yes.
Well, I'm not saying that you should do it without fence. I'm saying that there are two ways to issue a CL flush. One is the conventional CL flush followed by a fence,
right,
which you haven't done, you're not even exploring yet.
No.
The other is to simulate the CL flush, the more efficient CL flush, based on the email I sent you.
Yes.
And that may or may not require a fence, because it operates differently than a CL flush. It may require a fence after all, I don't know, at the end. But I think for you, because you're still working on the alternate CL flush, you could have a version that works just by issuing the CL flush instruction without having to worry about how to get temporary registers and things like that, right?
True.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it makes sense.
So I think that will be much more tractable for you than the simulation of the CL flush, which is probably also tractable, but it will require a little bit more time.
Yeah, it's good to have something concrete with you.
Mm-hmm.
Just in a bit of it.
Yeah, and so I guess the other question is in terms of the correctness. Do you have any points or specific items in the design where you are still working on the details, where you're not completely certain that it works as it should or as it needs to, or you don't even know how it needs to work? Are there any gaps in your mind with the design that we should be thinking about and talking about?
For instance, I haven't solved the problem of allocations being in one page. I think that's a very low on my priority list.
Mm-hmm.
There are some internet fragmentation issues in the way we map files, the way we map the files, the file mapper, which is the mechanism by which we allocate pages. Because we don't have allocations being in one page, then for the file mapper logic is very simple because you always allocate one page. But if you were to allocate something bigger than a page, then your internal fragmentation problems materialize.
Yeah.
So that logic is very simple, doesn't deal with any of that.
Let's say that we don't worry about that problem yet until we get some workloads to run.
So you're saying that I don't have logic to free anything yet. So there's no freeing of persisting objects yet. I guess that was also low because I don't need it to run a workload. I mean, I'm wasting memory, but it's not as critical as getting something to work.
Sure.
That
makes sense to me.
Right. And with that, I'm assuming, because I didn't spend much time on that, probably require operations to do those lookups, to do the free, will require extra metadata and things like that, which will require some modification to some data structures. But to answer your question, I don't think there's any gap in the design. Mostly because there are some things that I knew, and a big chunk of it is borrowed from the old version of SoftPN, and that's proven to work. So that minute is.
I was also concerned about the correctness related questions of the various mechanisms.
Say that again.
Correctness of the various persistence mechanisms.
Right.
Consistency mechanisms. I don't know if you've had significant discussion about
could you give more specifics? Be more specific.
So, for instance, PMSync.
PMSync.
How does it work? And are we convinced that there are no gaps in the correctness of PMSync?
I see.
The high level, okay, application issues of PMSync. Are we doing everything right? I remember that we had an initial design that you talked about in the slides, and I also reused those same slides at Intel. But we haven't, or at least I haven't, exposed myself to the details and the particulars. So the question is, are you convinced that it's all sorted out? Right, that's the first question. Second is, when you have to do copy on write after a PM sync, are those details all sorted out? Recovery. How does recovery work? A restore of a container. Are the details all sorted out?
I think so.
Okay. That's good. I don't know. I'm just wondering. I'm just wondering aloud.
I'll be happy to walk you through that.
I don't need to. I'm just wondering if those are need to be discussion points for us.
I will feel better if we could have an in-depth discussion about that, in which I can walk you step by step what's been done. Because I am convinced I ran some simple tests, and they worked.
Okay.
But maybe I didn't think of all. I'm sure I didn't think of everything.
Well, working for us in this specific project is not enough, right? Because ordering of memory operations matters
sure.
a lot, and which
sure.
is not visible if there is no failure, and we have no way to simulate those failures yet.
That's the worst part, yeah. That's true.
So I just wanted to see if we need to talk about that. And whether you think it would be useful.
Perhaps we can postpone that until we get to the point where we're testing for that. When that happens, and if I find a problem, then I refresh your memory about how things are done, and I can think
okay.
of talking about it.
Okay, that sounds good. Now, yeah, that's the other thing is testing. I don't know how to test it without this stuff here. Yeah. Right? So if there are any ideas as to how we could potentially test this thing, that would be good.
The testing that I've been doing so far, it's primitive to say the least. Basically, I write some patterns and then recover and look for those patterns.
After a failure?
I have some tests in which I inject some failures randomly. And that one seems to be recovering fine too. But that's the injection of the failure.
But the failure requires persistent memory, isn't it? So if your process is gone, is there a way for us to... Well, this is with PMFS.
No, you don't even have to have the PMFS, right? You allocate... The test failure was basically there's an application that performs some allocations, and it writes some pattern to that, and at some point it crashes.
Yeah.
So there's an internal randomization mechanism that once hits some point, it does a division by zero, and it crashes.
Yeah.
And then the restore, it's also printing what has been done so far. So in the restore, I recover and get to that point in which previous to the crash. The consistent point previous to the crash. I know
but
it's
how do you
simple,
get the consistent point previous to the crash if your container is not persistent? Your container needs to be persistent, right?
The container is persistent, right? We are memory mapping from file.
Oh, from a file.
Right.
Okay.
We're using PMFS so that the file is not in the hard disk, it's in memory, but in principle,
okay.
It could be anywhere.
Okay, so it's a memory mapped file.
Yes.
Right, of course. Yeah. Somehow I missed that link. Memory mapped file into PMFS is what the library uses.
Yes.
Okay. And the injected failures are these random crashes of the process, of the application.
The reason why I don't think it's enough is because the injection of the crash is in one point in the code, as opposed to...
And not just that, it's in one specific execution. After one specific execution, what YAD does is that it actually is able to reproduce all possible executions.
Oh,
all possible
about reordering.
Memory reordering
yes,
prior
yes,
to the
I,
crash.
I don't have any control over that.
Yeah. So, well, ideally we need to have a tool like this to do the testing. But in the absence of that, I need to write to these guys to find out what's going on. Because it's come to a standstill with the...
I got an email.
Yeah.
I know. I just simply forward you the conversation.
Yeah. I was looking into it. I'm planning to respond to it. But go ahead. Do you have anything about this? Whether we are getting this or any progress on the YAD tool?
There's a machine in which they have the.
I have access to the machine, but I mean my home directory contains nothing. So I don't know where is the path to, I wrote to them saying, what is the path to the software? And I haven't heard back from them.
Yes, I think there are some folders that are mounted. I think if you do mount, you see some extra folders.
Oh yeah, so I didn't get any of those instructions yet. So
yeah.
How to access the software.
But that machine doesn't have that, at least it didn't have that when I was there.
Uh-huh.
The only thing that it has is some scripts that allow you to modify the latency for loads.
Mm-hmm. I see.
And it also has PMFS. So you can... Which we have anyway. But they have the simulation for loads. You can change that.
Oh, okay. Inside the PMFS. They are already configured.
You use that on top of PMFS, but I think this modifying the latency of loads doesn't require PMFS.
Yeah.
Something else that they do.
Mm-hmm.
So yes.
Yeah.
Without it, I don't really know how to test for
yeah, so I guess on my to-do list is to write to them to find out what's going on.
How critical do you think that is? Like, not having that tool, do you think it would be a roadblock for us?
Not significantly. But the benefit of having that will push us over more easily into the accept side. I mean, having it will make it much easier for us to be taken seriously.
Is that the only way you can make sure of the memory ordering?
Well, that's the only way that's available currently. I'm sure there are other ways, but this is the available one at this point.
Where do you see it? Where do you see it?
It's the other thing.
Where?
Okay, so I'm going to follow up on this. Okay, so what are the next steps in your mind, Leo?
I'm going to focus on the simulation and field flush. Finish that so we can start doing some comparison between the simulation, the simulated version of it, and the one that is not.
Okay, and alright. So what are the workloads that you have in mind, the micro benchmarks?
I think I'd like to start with the micro benchmarks because those are the ones that we know they work.
I would recommend that you use the current CL flush as is. Besides what you're already doing. Because you need to have something, because we don't know. I mean, we are following their advice to say, okay, I simulated and sort of use CL flush. But it would be important for us if we write a paper to say what we are doing and why we are doing it and justify it with numbers. So we'll probably need to present some numbers, at least initially, to say, okay, well, this is what we found in our investigation, and beyond this point, we're not going to use the conventional CL flush, but rather simulate.
Maybe it would give a better understanding as to why they're simulating it that way. If we read exactly what CL flush does from the manual, and then maybe they're doing it in terms of, like, they know that it's an insertion that performs this many cycles, or...
Sure. Yeah, it would be good to know more about what CL flush does. Yeah. Okay. Okay, so, and we're hoping that we'll actually be able to run some benchmarks after we have this implementation sorted out, at least one of these, right?
Mm-hmm.
We'll have the micro benchmarks, and maybe these are the same micro benchmarks with the data structures that we did with SoftVM, or there's something else?
They're the same.
Similar.
Same link lists and trees and things like that.
Okay, and can we still get the original disk-based SoftVM to work? Or SSD-based SoftVM to work? And
I guess we should be able to do that.
Yeah, I'm just wondering about the paper, whether it makes sense for us to include that data or not in the paper. It all depends on the story. So we need to have the story first before we can decide one way or the other.
You like to do a comparison?
I'm just wondering if it fits in our story. So we need to talk about the story at some point. You know, you have a chance to put something together. I remember we talked about creating a list of contributions.
Yes.
So maybe for next week we should worry about creating that story with contributions, and that will guide our evaluation better. So Atha, what's going on with you? What have you been doing?
Actually, I didn't have much time. I was going through the code for some of the time. It's actually frustrating.
Do you have any questions?
Yeah, I have discussed with you